Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 18th of January 2021. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for downloading, sharing, telling a friend, and all that stuff. The countdown to a couple of things. The countdown to inauguration, the countdown to impeachment, the countdown to Democrats going full Nazi. Who knows? I mean, they're already there, but maybe a little more openly this time. We're going to get to all of that on today's show. I'm going to try and bring you people with inside knowledge and basic knowledge that can help explain what to expect this week or what to possibly expect this week. And that will be the focus of today's program is, can a president be impeached after they leave office or tried after they leave office? Because that seems to me to be, you know, let's Republicans retake Congress and impeach Barack Obama, impeach Joe Biden, impeach Bill Clinton, impeach everybody retroactively. If that's the standard, then you've got to play by that standard, right? It would only be fair. So we'll get into all of that with our guest today. I watched Cobra Kai over the weekend, season three. If you haven't watched Cobra Kai on Netflix and you have Netflix, it is so, so worth it. Even if you thought that the Karate Kid movies were terrible. And after the first one, they were pretty terrible. But the damn series is freaking awesome. And it's such a trip, nostalgia trip, that it's well worth your time. What also is well worth your time is AncientLifeOil.com, the CBD, the best CBD available, 100% organic, pure CBD oil. Everything's on sale this month, the month of January. Yeah, everything is 15% off. That means huge savings to you. Stock up. That also means that if you use promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, and click apply at checkout, you get free fast shipping on top of saving 15%. It is their best sale ever, quite frankly. Go to AncientLifeOil.com and check out all the products they have. They're 15% off. They have it with a CBD oil. It's 100% organic with a trace amount of THC. And if that doesn't, if that makes you nervous, if that's what's been holding you back, they have broad spectrum CBD oil that has zero, nada, not even a trace amount of THC in it. Go to AncientLifeOil.com. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout and click apply to get the deal. So here we go. Let's get into the program. Joining me as my legal expert is, he's been on the show several times. He's my hero when my car broke down. Brian Darling of Liberty Government Affairs, Hill employee extraordinaire and master of procedure in the Senate. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How are you?
I, except for the fact that, you know, the week is starting again, I can't complain. And this is going to be a hell of a week. I suspect we're going to be very soon, not right away, but very soon in for a change of the news cycle slowing down to what used to constitute normal and the flurry of stories and the end of the Trump administration. I think media will go back to sleep. But as we enter into this, I noticed you got into a Twitter spat with somebody. And you and I spent some time talking about this. The idea that Democrats might not transmit the articles of impeachment for at least 100 days. They might wait their take their sweet ass time, or they may do it immediately, which the Congress, the Senate isn't back until Tuesday. Either way, by the time there is a trial, Donald Trump will be out of office. How is this possible that a president can be impeached after they've left the Oval Office?
Well, I don't believe they can. I think that when you look at what happened in the House, the impeachment proceeding that happened in the House did happen when President Trump was still in office. But clearly, when you look forward to the Senate trial, it will not happen until after he's out of office and a private citizen. In the Constitution, Article 2, Section 4 states very clearly, the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. That's pretty clear. It doesn't say former presidents. It doesn't say private citizens who used to serve in government. I don't know how you get around that. But of course, I'm in this big Twitter spat with a bunch of legal eggheads. I don't mean to disparage them. They're smart guys, and they've done a lot of studying to get the jobs that they have at law schools and in writing legal treatises on these ideas. But only a lawyer could write something and make the argument and spin their way out of the fact that the Constitution is clear, and you just can't do it. President Trump will not be president when the Senate has the trial, especially if they wait 100 days just to clear the decks of the Biden agenda, to get the Biden agenda kicked off in the first 100 days, and then say, oh, we're going to wait till the end of that and then do the impeachment hearing, a late impeachment hearing. It's just unconstitutional on its face.
Well, apparently there is no protocol for submitting articles of impeachment from the House, passed by the House, to the Senate, because just sitting on them until it's politically convenient or expedient for you really undercuts the idea of the urgency that Democrats were putting forth. They waited a few days the last time they impeached President Trump, and the Senate then has to immediately take them up. There is no, all right, well, we'll put this on the back burner, or there's no committee hearings. It goes immediately to a trial. When there is a trial in the Senate, the president has access to certain things, rights as president, like executive privilege. How would that even work in an impeachment trial of an ex-president? Has executive privilege ever been applied retroactively?
It would be a question that would be dealt with by the Biden administration, which is, you know, you're pointing out something that Jonathan Turley wrote about in USA Today, and he made the case that it's unfair to the president, who's a former president, to rely on executive privilege to be exercised by the Biden administration, because, you know, first of all, he doesn't have the benefit of having the Office of Legal Counsel in the White House, taxpayer-funded entity defending him. He's going to go out and pay his own lawyers, go in. It's like a more of a private trial, and it's not a battle between the branches of government, the Article 1 powers versus the Article 2 powers, and the two branches having this battle where the legislature, the Article 1 in the Constitution set up legislature, has a power to remove the president, remove him for a high crime or misdemeanor. It just doesn't make any sense. And so you're raising a valid one issue that's a valid point. There are so many others, but it's a private, you're basically hauling a private citizen who used to be in government before the Senate and saying, we're going to prevent you from ever holding office again. And that's not why that provision's in the Constitution. The provision's in there to remove somebody who's a danger to society, who committed a crime.
And that's really the thing, is what the Democrats want is to prevent Donald Trump from ever being able to run for president again. I've received from Democrat groups, emails, fundraising emails, saying just that, give us money so we can fight Donald Trump to make sure that he never becomes president again. Nancy Pelosi has said pretty much the same thing. That is not grounds for impeachment. That is not a justification for any of this. Where do you see if you had to guess, where would you see the Biden administration going on this?
Well, I mean, we've heard, Joe Biden say many different things. And one thing that he has said is that doesn't feel great about, you know, going after the prior administration, but his Justice Department is going to do it. Do you think Merrick Garland's Justice Department is going to hold back and, you know, trying to indict members of the Trump family and to go after them in the court? So I don't think that the Biden administration is going to provide any help to Donald Trump private citizen when he's hauled before the Senate. They'll probably just sit it out and let it work itself out and be very, you know, try and just take a hands-off approach because they don't really have a role in it, which is, you know, it exposes the fallacy of this whole exercise. I mean, you have a sitting president who's going to sit out an impeachment, even though the only person who could be subject to impeachment would be Joe Biden, because he will be present at the time that this trial is happening. It's just completely absurd. Yet I'm in a bunch of fights with a bunch of lawyers who have these really long arguments citing precedent. It's happened in the past where we've had an officer, not the president, but a lower officer being hauled before the Senate after they were out of office. And they cite common law, English common law, and they cite the fact that some states you can't impeach somebody who's governor until after they're out of office. But that all doesn't matter when you actually look at the Constitution, and it is clear it prevents it. I mean, it's just absurd arguments that you hear, I think, from the other side. And, you know, the longer the argument, the more likely they are to be spinning and trying to convince you to ignore what you're reading.
Well, by this logic, then, in 1974, Democrats and Congress was wrong not to continue with the impeachment of Richard Nixon.
That's right. That's exactly right. And one of the precedents is of an individual. His name escapes me right now, but he was impeached by the House after he resigned, and then the Senate didn't convict. So, you know, there's precedent even for the House to do something like that. But precedent doesn't mean that it's constitutional. Just because it's happened in the past doesn't mean that politicians were following the Constitution. And that's why we have a separation of powers. And that's why if the Senate were to have a trial and they were to convict and they were to say, Donald Trump, you can never run for office again, guarantee you it'll be before the Supreme Court. And that raises another issue. I mean, in the Constitution, it also says that the Supreme Court justice, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, will preside in a Senate impeachment hearing. Well, what if he says, I'm not going to show up? What if Justice Roberts says, I'm not going over there because I'm not sure that this is even constitutional, and they put somebody else in the chair, like Vice President Kamala Harris or the present pro tem of the Senate, who will be Patrick Leahy, who's a senator from Vermont, who's the longest serving senator of the majority party. I mean, that's absurd. That shows that this is a wholly a political exercise that is of dubious constitutionality, and they shouldn't do it. So any senator that does go forward in 100 days or whenever, when they know that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, if he doesn't show up and they start moving forward, it's clear that you're going to have Democrats violating their oath of office to uphold the Constitution.
And then all of them should be expelled from Congress immediately in the name of justice or something like that. What do you make of this whole thing as somebody who's been involved in politics for 20 or 25 years, watching this thing being done? I was the day of the Capitol riot, which the media has taken to calling an insurrection or a coup attempt, which is absurd. But I was in a meeting with my boss at my radio show, and I come out, and you'd called during my phone's ringing, and it was vibrating, so I just silenced it. And I said, oh, in the elevator, I'll call him back. And I did, and you said, can you believe what's going on? I had no idea. You were watching this from the get-go. What was going through your mind, having worked up there, having been involved in politics, having seen or thinking you saw everything that could possibly happen on Capitol Hill in your 12 years or whatever it was up there? When you saw what was going on, what was happening? What were you thinking?
Well, at first it looked like a bunch of MAGA hat wearing Trump supporters kind of stormed into the Capitol and were just kind of marching around. And initially it looked like they were just kind of walking around. They almost looked like a bunch of tourists because you could see video coming out of the Capitol Dome of people just walking back and forth, taking selfies, taking pictures like a bunch of tourists. But as we move forward, and you saw video of the shooting on the House side and the guns drawn in the House chamber and the fact that some people invaded the Senate floor and sat in the chair and were rifling through papers, it became obvious that this was a situation where some really bad people went in there with bad intentions, you know, were beating up the police. A police officer died. Another one committed suicide. And that the man who committed suicide, I mean, I remember when I used to work in the Senate, he would be at the door, one of the doors that I would come in every day. So I recognized him by his face. And, you know, you as somebody who also worked over there, you know, those Capitol Police, they get a tough job. You know, they sit there and, you know, it's always waiting for something really bad to happen. Like they're there mostly a sleepy day and they give you a hard time if you buzz and you get annoyed that you have to put your hands over your head and get wanded. But in the end, you know, ultimately those guys are there to protect you and to protect your boss and to make sure nobody runs in there with a gun and starts shooting. And so, you know, they were efforts of the Capitol Police and the D.C. police were heroic. I mean, you saw the video of the guy getting dragged out into the crowd and people beating on him and tasing him. I mean, it's just sickening. It really is disgusting what a lot of those people engage in. I'm sure that, you know, I know people that went to the rally over at the White House. I mean, a lot of people went to hear Trump speak, to see his last big speech, and they wanted to be part of history. But little did they know that afterwards, a small sliver of that crowd would go with really bad intentions to the Capitol, invade the Capitol, and some of which there's evidence that they were running around looking for members of Congress to, at a minimum, harass and possibly do great harm to.
What do you make of, because you can always count on Democrats to spoil goodwill, you know, like after the death of George Floyd, I think everybody in the country was on board with, all right, once you get somebody in cuffs and you've got them contained, get off of them. All right. That was too far. Now, later we found out about the elephant, could kill an elephant amount of fentanyl he had in him. And that's a matter for the courts. But there was ample support for what Democrats initially said that they wanted and activists said that they wanted, that it could have gotten done. Seeing that, Democrats sort of said, well, then let's turn it up to 11. Defund the police, disband the police, get rid of police, empty out the prisons. Let's do all of this. The whole country is fundamentally racist. Police are killing black men left and right, and none of which is remotely true. And they squandered that goodwill after what happened on that Wednesday. Mitch McConnell gave a great speech. Mike Pence gave a great speech that we'll be undeterred. Now let's get back to work, so on and so forth. And Chuck Schumer stands up and says, this is like Pearl Harbor. And then the analogy is, this is like 9/11 start. And police would have never put up with that if it had been Black Lives Matter, which we just spent a year watching Black Lives Matter try to murder police and nobody be arrested, and anybody who was arrested have charges dropped against them. It was so patently false. But there was an opportunity. They probably could have tightened up security, gotten more funding for Capitol Police. But Democrats squandered that goodwill and brought it right back into the realm of hyperpartisanship. Or am I reading that wrong?
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, look at the evidence. We've seen that some members of Congress immediately leapt to the conclusion that, because they saw a couple of videos, they thought that the Capitol Police led in these protesters. You can see from the video, and again, Derek, you work there, you know, these guys were overwhelmed. There are a handful of Capitol Police officers trying to deal with the situation. Of course they're going to get out of the way so they don't get killed, so they don't get beat up. And when you see, even the guy that took a selfie with a protester, that's a strategy to kind of make nice with these guys, to try and be nice and talk them out of what they're doing. I don't know if you saw the video. There's a police officer in the Senate chamber trying to be nice to these guys, saying, okay, guys, you know, maybe you want to get out of the chamber. Can you guys leave? It didn't work, but he was trying. And I think that it's really disgusting.
Well, because the alternative is to just take out your gun and shoot him dead. You know?
And that was... And one of the police officers said he considered that. The guy that got dragged out of the Capitol said that he considered pulling his gun and starting shooting protesters, but he thought that it wouldn't end well for him because they'd take away his gun and maybe shoot him because he was so, you know, overwhelmed and there was just so many protesters beating on him. But, you know, so you see that. You see the race card being played. Of course, you know, BLM would have been treated differently. Well, you know, that's absurd and ridiculous. I mean, it's just apples and oranges, and it's always race comes into it. And the whole AOC, I don't know who to trust. I'm worried that members of Congress are going to, you know, rat me out and throw me to the wolves and throw me to the protesters. I mean, they overplay their hand as usual. They can't help themselves. You have members in the House and Senate talking about kicking Senator Josh Hawley and Senator Ted Cruz out, throwing them out of the Senate. And that's absurd. Throwing House members out. I know that they're doing research to see if there were any Capitol tours given before the insurgency.
Tours are normal, and members leading Capitol tours, especially in downtime, is common.
Right, but I mean they're banned now. So if there was, do we really think a member walked around the House saying, "Hey, here's a good way to break in, and if you guys get in, go into this room"? That's ridiculous. No member would ever do that.
If you want to kill Nancy Pelosi, you got to turn left here, and then right there, and then down the stairs. Like if that member exists, get them. Right.
Yeah.
But
expel them.
What's bizarre to me is that all of these allegations never come with a member. It was that one new member from New Jersey who claimed the woman, I can't remember her last name, but she was the one who made the allegation, but she never put a name to it. She still hasn't put a name to it, which to me means that there was no name to put to it. It was garbage.
That's right. I mean, how many times have we already heard, oh, Capitol, there may be members of the House that gave tours before the insurgency? Well, who are they? If you know that the tours happened, then tell us who they are so we can do some research into it. But, you know, all these allegations, you know, AOC again saying, oh, you know, we need to kick members out. And I didn't know who to trust in the House. Like, does she really think that other members would have handed her over to protesters? That would have never happened. And it's really bad that you have members overplaying their hand. And they're overplaying it by saying they're going to kick Hawley and Cruz out because they did something that Democrats did back in 2014, 2008, 2000. I mean, I don't agree with the objections, but I think that saying that you're going to kick members out because they objected, it's ridiculous. That's, you can't kick members out for that. And that's partisanship, and that's overreaching. And the Democrats are doing it again. Like, why do they want to have this trial to ban Trump from ever serving again? Because they want to overreach. They just want to ban him because it makes them feel better. And they think they have the power to do so. And that's just not right. And it's unconstitutional.
It's rather hilarious to hear them hyperventilate that we need to get rid of these people because they dared question through the constitutional method the results of the election. When Nancy Pelosi announced her impeachment managers, and the lead impeachment manager is Jamie Raskin, who as a freshman in 2017 on January 6th, his first act was to contest the electoral votes, the electoral college results for Donald Trump. It's the hypocrisy is amazing.
It is. It really is. It's over the top. It is amazing. And, you know, all the members saying that exactly what you're saying, you know, members that voted to do this back in 2004, all of a sudden saying, how dare they do it? They're inspiring people to take over the Capitol when they did the same thing. I mean, and these are the same Democrats who refuse to denounce the violence in Portland and Seattle and the burning of cities and a lot of the left-wing violence.
Well, sometimes they fundraised for them. They fundraised to bail them out.
Right. And it'd be one thing for them to say it's wrong for them for what they're doing there and it's wrong for what happened here. But you just don't hear that. Sadly, these politicians refuse to be fair about it. And it is what it is in Washington. And I guess we're going to see more of it going forward. And I fully expect the Biden Justice Department to go after conservatives in many ways. I think there'll be a lot of overreach. You'll have a lot of people that probably aren't deserving of jail time to get it in what happened at the Capitol. I mean, obviously, people who engaged in violence should go to jail. And a lot of the people that just broke through the doors and did what they did, it's awful what they did. But there will be overreach on that. We'll probably see a new domestic Patriot Act so the government can surveil more. We're already seeing an overreaction with the ridiculous military occupation of the Capitol right now and the wall that's going up around the around the Capitol. I mean, it's an overreach, and we're seeing it there, and we're going to see it. I guarantee you, we're going to see Don Jr. We're going to see Ivanka. We're going to see all of the Trump family and a lot of former Trump administration officials. They're going to be gone after by the Justice Department within the first year of this new administration.
Were you in Washington, D.C. on September 11th?
Yeah, I worked for Senator Bob Smith, and I was in the Russell Senate office building when everything happened.
The police presence now and the shutting down of the mall. I was two blocks away at the Heritage Foundation, and I remember that Friday walking around with my buddy Doug, walking around the Capitol grounds. It was a ghost town. There were troops around, but not, you know, tens of thousands of troops around. It was more eerie because it was so vacant. But now they've shut down the mall, the entire downtown area. You can't get down. You have an office near Capitol Hill. Could you get to it if you had to?
Nope. There's no way I could get there now. I guess if I drove there, I could go a roundabout way to try and get pretty close and then walk and then, you know, have to show a card or something with my work address. But I'm not even going to try because from what I understand, it's impossible to get anywhere around Washington. So it's, you know, you're right. It's far different. Look at what happened after September 11th. I mean, even we saw a big expansion of where the public could go with their cars after September 11th in the Senate and in the House. I mean, roads that used to be easy to go up and down, that's changed. And you even go further back. I remember when I was an intern and when I was working in Capitol Hill right after college, I remember driving up and down Pennsylvania Avenue right in front of the White House. And
Oklahoma City bombing shut that down. It was supposed to be temporary, and it has never reopened, and it never will. So do you think we're looking
at that? Yeah, I think we'll see an expansion of where people can go. I think getting in and out of the Capitol is going to be a lot harder going forward. Maybe they'll make you make appointments, or they'll make it much harder for people to get into the Capitol, to get into the Senate and House office buildings. And I think they'll expand the perimeter just a little bit further to you know, make themselves feel better, even though it probably won't change much with regard to safety.
No, and what's annoying is it's such a beautiful building. It's such a beautiful area. And now they're likely going to erect permanent barriers. At least I hope they make them aesthetically pleasing, give us a velvet prison rather than these big, you know, 10-foot tall black unclimbable fences. But you can always count on government to overreact. But I'm just surprised that the reaction is really greater than September 11th, because literally on September 14th or whatever it was, or 13th, my friend Doug and I were able to walk down and walk on the lawn of the Capitol, and now you can't get there. Let's talk a second, because you and I both know a lot of people who worked in the Trump administration, still work in the Trump administration. We are seeing an unprecedented attempt by the left to ruin the lives of everybody. I don't even know if there was an attempt to go after people and make sure that they were tarred forever in their permanent employment for people who lied to the country or were responsible for Benghazi, which, you know, was a horrible blunder. And I don't even know if you can call it a blunder, negligence on behalf of the Obama administration. But the people who work in the Trump administration, even in secondary departments at lower levels, they just happen to be one of the 4,000 or so political appointees, are being targeted by the left so that they are essentially unemployable for the rest of their lives. Where do we go from here? Is this a game Republicans should play or what?
No, I think Republicans should really, I think, you know, the one good thing about Biden, I think his tone will be a lot more conciliatory. I don't think him personally and the rhetoric you'll hear coming out of his mouth is going to be all that partisan. I think the problem is it's downstream. I think that the people he's going to put in charge of the different agencies, and then even further downstream, you're going to have a lot of angry Democrats that are going to get jobs in the Justice Department, Treasury, Homeland Security, and get in places where they can get some revenge on Republicans. And that's the problem. I mean, we're seeing it with big tech. You know, you see, Parler has basically been booted from all of these web services, Amazon Web Services, and all these other platforms that can't have an Apple app anymore because these organizations, these corporations have said that we don't like your content, which is exactly what Section 230 protects big tech from being prosecuted for. And when we know that Facebook and Twitter also was a hub for a lot of the extremism and the extremist organizing. So, you know, it's coming from all angles right now. It's coming from the corporate world. It's coming from the government, and it's not right. And I think, you know, if you're a former Trump administration official as of late next week, good luck finding a job. And it's going to be hard because you're not going to see. It's not like the Obama administration where there were open arms at CNN and MSNBC and even at Fox to have some of them come on board and give their views. That's not going to happen with the Trump administration officials. You're going to continue to see leftists on CNN and MSNBC, and you'll see Never Trumpers all over the place. But you're not going to see many former Trump administration officials on any networks.
What is the long-term impact of this? Because I remember George W. Bush as a Nazi. I remember that John McCain became a Nazi. I remember how Mitt Romney was portrayed as a Nazi. But they didn't go after these people afterwards. They're like, all right, well, it's over. Let's move on. With Trump, they seem to have upped the game. And that's going to have a detrimental effect because you can already, you know, whoever Republicans nominate in 2024 is a Nazi, and it could be worse than Trump. So people are going to, you know, people who are interested, dedicated conservatives are going to look at that and go, I'd like to serve my country, but not at the cost of the rest of my life. And that's going to lead to problems in the future when a future Republican administration tries to staff up.
Yeah, it's true. But think about it this way. When the Obama administration was completed, President Obama had gone from a 60-vote majority in the Senate, a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, big majority in the House, having the presidency, to when he left office, devastating losses in state capitals. I mean, it was, I think, 600 and change seats were given away in different state capitals and governorships. And he'd given away the Senate and the House Donald Trump was elected president. So as bad as things look now, I think there will be a rebound for Republicans. It may take 4 years, it may even take 6 years, but I have to imagine at least in 2 years, there'll be a mini rebound where Republicans probably take over the House. Redistricting is going to help, but also the fact that it's a very slim majority for Democrats now, and there's always a backlash against the party in power in the first 2 years. Trump lost, 40, 41 seats? Obama lost like 60, 66 seats, something like that in the midterm. So there is going to be some snapback, and I think basically Biden has 2 years to get his agenda implemented, and then we'll see what happens in 2024. So as bad as things look right now, I think everything will be worked out, and there'll be more of a focus on Joe Biden than, you know, is Donald Trump controlling the Republican Party and is enabler getting the nomination.
But if, you know, some of our mutual friends that I'm not going to name here, but if they... You know, if somebody learns from them that, you know, because they're being hounded, lists are being compiled and whatever. So say a Republican wins in 2024. Who the hell is going to want to go work for that Republican administration, knowing that when they leave that job, there's going to be a left wing mob trying to make sure that no company ever hires them?
Well, I think we can both admit that Donald Trump was a unique individual, and no matter what,
no, you know, the because Republican if you connect is. The dots, it's George W. Bush Nazi, McCain Nazi, Romney Nazi, Trump Nazi. There's never going to be a Democrat who says, "Well, you know, he's not as bad as the last guy, so let's leave them alone."
No, I hear you. But I mean, Republicans are always treated like that. I mean, it's always been the way it is on K Street, on in the corporate world. I mean, why do you think all of these tech companies are controlled by liberals and they hire liberal lobbyists and liberal PR firms? Because they just, that's the way that the corporate world leans. And then you look at the networks, they're left wing. You know, the networks for the most part are left wing. And the only one that gives an actual fair and balanced view is Fox. And they get criticized for, you know, having having a viewpoint, but they always have Democrats on. They have, you know, they have a number of people on there who are liberals. So former Obama administration officials, they have, you know, former heads of the DNC. You just don't see that in other networks. So there's always going to be bias in the real world against anybody who serves in a Republican administration. And I guess you have to just suck it up and accept that as a fact of life if you're going to go work for the next Republican president.
Yeah, I just think that I fear that a lot of people won't go work for the next Republican president, especially if the left is successful right now in persecuting and prosecuting people in the Trump administration. And you don't have to have a conviction to ruin somebody's life and somebody's livelihood and somebody's reputation. You can, with the power of the Justice Department, as we saw with many people involved in the Russiagate hoax, as well, we'll just keep calling them before Congress. We'll keep calling them before the Justice Department. They'll have to lawyer up. That'll cost them a fortune. They're not even the target of a probe, maybe, but it'll ruin them. And we could see the full-blown, we saw a lot of the weaponization of government in the last 4 years. I fear that we're going to see it even further. Do you think that's possible?
Yes. Yes, I'm always worried about the criminalization of politics. And I think we're going to see that get a lot worse over the next 4 years, as bad as it's been. You know, when you see people get involved in politics and the next thing you know, they're all in jail. You know, it's I think you're going to see more of that. I think
they don't even have to go to jail. They can just be ruined financially.
That's right. That's right. But I do fear that. That's one of my great fears, is that we become one of those countries where once your party loses, everybody gets locked up. You know, that's the direction we're going in, and it's not a good direction.
Well, we're kind of seeing that in Michigan with the charges against former Governor Rick Schneider pertaining to the Flint water crisis. Now, somehow the local officials, the Democrats on the ground, have largely avoided being charged. But we're seeing basically a Democrat administration prosecute a Republican administration over decisions that were made or weren't made, which is incredibly dangerous. As Donald Trump sees his businesses be targeted, you know, New York City dropped all their contracts with them. Deutsche Bank won't loan them any money anymore. The PGA is pulling out of a tournament in 2022 already. You think they could weather that storm in 2022, but they're already balking about something a year and a half before it happens. What is the chilling effect on American citizens who are thinking about running for office? You know, if the whole hellfire of the power of the government, and if it's not just going to be federal, it could be local governments too, state governments, if you step on the wrong toes in your pursuit, that sets us on a dangerous, dangerous path. That A, private citizens need to stay the hell out of it. Politics is a business, and it's our business, being advanced by some of these professional politicians. But it is also the criminalization of politics on a mass scale, not just the presidential scale. Would you ever consider running for office, knowing full well that the Democratic Party will unleash the hounds of hell at you?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I'm really excited about doing anything like that. I mean, I do think that, you know, we have some great people, a handful of great people in government right now. I mean, I'm a big fan of Thomas Massey, Republican from Kentucky in the House, and Chip Roy, Republican from Texas, who's a House member. I mean, there are a handful of really good members there that are trying to do the right thing. And you know, they're constantly under abuse. And at some point, they'll probably just tap out and quit because they just get sick of it. And you know what? That's kind of the way it should be. I mean, I like the fact that you don't want to have a bunch of career politicians going there. Like, you know, I was looking at Patrick Leahy, who would end up being going to be the present pro tem of the Senate. Guess when he was first elected to the Senate?
1968 is my guess.
No, 75. But that's 75. Unbelievable. Long time ago. Now, so 75, he was elected. And then the next members, I mean, it wasn't for quite a few years. I mean, most of your members were elected relatively recently. But, you know, it's amazing. You got guys like him and Joe Biden, you know, who's spent his whole life in politics as a senator, you know, elected to the Senate. The moment he was eligible, same as with Patrick Leahy. I mean, I don't think you want people to do that. You don't want people to just go in for life, but you also don't want to dissuade good people who are just common people who say, hey, you know, I want to run for government and do the best thing and then get out in a few years. You don't want to have the criminalization of politics where people are afraid that if they actually declare for office, they're going to end up in prison.
It's a scary, scary time. And now you've got a flurry of, What is a 50-50 Senate do when a president overreaches? Because Joe Biden is going to go crazy with his magic pen. There is a lot that Democrats, a lot of damage Democrats can do through reconciliation. But can't they only do a reconciliation bill once per year or twice per year? So there'll be a lot of things that Joe Biden is going to try to do through executive order.
Yes and no. They're only supposed to do one a year, but guess what? The Republicans didn't use a budget process last year, so it's conceivable that they can use the last year's budget resolution to do the first reconciliation bill, and then do a budget this year, and then later in the year do a second reconciliation measure. And when we're talking about reconciliation, all that means is that it's a spending bill, but it also it's the one way you can get around the Senate filibuster, because if you basically write up a budget that says, hey, I'm going to give each committee orders to produce a bill to, you know, implement the something like Medicare for All. If you were to do that, then you have a means to get a spending measure across the finish line where you can get around the Senate filibuster. And so it is a way to implement a great deal of the Biden agenda and avoid the filibuster. But you have to make it has to be spending measures. You have to use it at least you have to have some aspect of spending in it to get around the filibuster and to use reconciliation. But they can do two of them this year if they really want to.
Was as Mitch McConnell's tenure this time comes to an end, there's no denying his success in confirming judges. The judiciary is in good shape for now, I don't trust Joe Manchin at all, until Joe Manchin decides, well, these Republicans are just too unreasonable, we have to get rid of the filibuster, despite my promise to not do that. But how would you assess the tenure of Mitch McConnell as majority leader here these last few years?
No, he's done a great job in getting Supreme Court justices across the finish line. He was perfectly justified in making sure Merrick Garland didn't get on the court, because Republicans controlled the Senate. And the process for a nomination to become an actual justice is the president nominates and the Senate either consents or doesn't consent. And there is the power in the Senate to not be a rubber stamp and to say no. And they did that. And so there also is a power at the last minute to confirm if you want to. And they did that with the most recent justice, Amy Coney Barrett. You have that. I think he did a great job with justices. I think, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the way that he didn't allow amendments to come up in the Senate, and the fact that he, there wasn't much debate and deliberation. And I wish that we would get back to a Senate that actually allows amendments and allows more filibusters and has more discussion and debate and more votes. But I don't think we're going to see that anytime in the near future, because I can guarantee you everything that McConnell did, Majority Leader Schumer will double down and do even worse.
Well, yeah. What do you think Schumer is going to be like as Majority Leader? Are they going to institute if you want to filibuster a bill, you have to actually filibuster a bill? Do you think they'll go that far?
I wish they would. That would make more sense than what I think is going to happen. What I think will happen is they're going to roll out a bunch of bills in the Senate and then force Republicans to filibuster and then get Joe Manchin to the point where he can say, throw up his hands and to make believe fury and say, look, these Republicans are being ridiculous. They're filibustering everything. We need to get rid of the legislative filibuster because there isn't one of nominations anymore. But the last vestige of the rights of individual senators is in the right to filibuster legislation. Because they're not allowed to offer amendments. I mean, McConnell didn't do it, and I guarantee you Schumer wasn't allowed to do it. So this is kind of chipping away at the original intent that our founders had for the Senate, and we'll see how that all plays out. But I bet you Schumer is going to be more tyrannical than Mitch McConnell when it comes to amendments and debate.
How long do you think that process, how long do you think Joe Manchin can hold out? Or will hold, not that he can't, he could hold out theoretically forever, but he has to put on a show. He has to say, yes. Well, I tried to work with these Republicans, but they just won't do it. So I'm left with no choice, blah, blah, blah. How long do you think that process takes?
I think what will happen is they'll either use reconciliation to fire through everything they can, or they will roll out a few bills and force Republicans to filibuster. And I think after the first filibuster, you know, if I'm Democrats, I just make them filibuster and then file cloture, which forces a filibuster. I just keep doing it and just harass Republicans and make the point, oh, Republicans are going to filibuster everything, even though that's within their rights. But then at some point, they can have Joe Manchin theatrically get up and make believe he's upset about it and say, okay, that's it. I'm on board with getting rid of the filibuster. Let's do it, and let's get the business of America done. You know, it'll be a big failure theater for Republicans because they're going to end up losing.
And then it's just game on from that point. And do the Republicans have any power in a 50-50 Senate?
Yeah, I mean, if right now it's a filibuster. I mean, you can basically object to every unanimous consent agreement.
But Republicans have no special abilities because they're tied than they would if they had, you know, if it were 59-41, it's the same thing. It doesn't really matter if it's by 1 or 1 million, or if it's even a tie with the vice president breaking the tie, they're in the same boat.
Well, if you have 60, then you can, you know, if Democrats had 60, they wouldn't have to worry about getting rid of the filibuster. And we saw that with the beginning of the Obama administration, where they had 60 votes and then they lost it. They had it until Scott Brown won that special election in Massachusetts, and they didn't really use it as much as they'd hoped. And I've heard Joe Biden complain that they missed a lot of opportunities. So, you know what we're seeing right now. We're seeing the third term of President Obama. I mean, it's all Obama retreads that are being put in all these positions in the Biden administration, and it's going to be the same policies. They're just going to finish up what they didn't get done during Obama's two terms, and now they have more power to do so because they have the House and they have the Senate.
It's a horrible, horrible future that you're painting right there, Brian, but we need to know about these sorts of things. So I appreciate it. Before we end the program, we got to talk about Cobra Kai. You'd watched it season 3 a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned it at the beginning of the show before you came on. Anybody who's ever seen Karate Kid, or even if you haven't and you just want some fun, watch Cobra Kai on Netflix. Now, you called me and said, you got to watch season 3. Did you watch it yet? I finally watched it. It was awesome. Season 3 is it's one of those shows where it's riding on its nostalgia in the first season, and you think, okay, well they're gonna run out of gas because you can only run on nostalgia for so long. But they found a way that each season, in my mind, gets better. It's sure it's hokey in parts, and the fact that everybody's kung fu fighting is a bit hilarious, but the way that they've done this, I don't know. It might be the best bit of television I've seen in a very long time. What did you think of season 3?
100% agree. It was so good. And yeah, you're right. I mean, how many times have you watched a series where season one's great, season two is okay, and season three sucks? But yeah, what we're seeing here is I feel like they're getting better every season. And my kids have, you know, jumped in and watched a few episodes, and my wife likes it, and she's never seen even The Karate Kid. So even if people who are unfamiliar, younger people who just never seen The Karate Kid, they'd like it. I mean, obviously, we like it more because it brings back the good old memories, but it's becoming a big thing. I don't know if you noticed, but the Washington Capitals are giving out Miyagi-Do headbands to their offensive and defensive players of the game. So it's becoming, you know, I think that we're not the only ones. I think a lot of people are recognizing how great this show really is.
I have a All Valley Karate Tournament t-shirt. And now I need to get an Eagle Fang Karate t-shirt. You know, and I'll tell you, the part of Johnny Lawrence, played by Billy Zabka, who was the bad guy in the movie, he's the hero. He's the one you identify with the most, almost routinely and regularly throughout, whereas Ralph Macchio character, in the first season, they kind of switched roles. Now he's consistently good, but it's damn the way that they do it. And the fact that they went back and got pretty much everybody who's still alive that was in the movies to come in and reprise their roles is just like, if you're sitting there and you're thinking, God, Joe Biden is going to freaking be president starting Wednesday. Watch Cobra just to tune it out for a bit. So definitely watch that. Anything else you can recommend while I got you? Because I've gotten some other good recommendations from you in the past.
I'm still just in the glow of that. I mean, lately I've been watching a lot of hockey because hockey started up again, and I've been watching playoff football. So I feel like my escape now is through sports again, which, you know, it's kind of lame when they don't have fans there. They had a couple fans for a couple of the football games, but in, you know, some of the hockey stadiums might have a few fans, but ultimately, you know, I love watching sports, and so I'm kind of getting back into that. That's where my focus has gone. So I know AP Bio is a great show on Peacock, but that's about it.
You got to watch Ted Lasso.
I want to watch that.
I watched it one weekend straight through, and I was like, oh my God. And like 2 weekends later, I watched it again. and then when my dad came out to visit, we were watching Peaky Blinders, which I'd bought him the first two seasons on DVD, but the other three seasons are only available in like region 2 coded DVDs for some reason. So I couldn't get them for him. So we watched some of that, and then to break it up, I turned him on to Ted Lasso. And so I've seen Ted Lasso three times so far. And I say so far because when my wife says, oh, I'm going to give that a shot finally, after my advice, my wife is the holdout on everybody else I've told has watched it. So when my wife finally comes around, I'll watch it again. It's an excellent show.
I will watch it. The commercials I've seen make it look very, very funny. So
It's smart funny. And people think, well, it's like Major League. In a way, it is like Major League, but it's in a very important way, it's not like Major League, because even the person who you think is trying to ruin the team, who is trying to ruin the team, ends up becoming a nice, you know, somebody you like. You like everybody on the show. It's excellent. Watch it. Learn from it. Brian, darling, thanks for coming on today. Let me pick your brain.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have. Tomorrow is Tuesday. Tomorrow is the last full day of the Trump presidency. We'll be here to talk about it and everything else that happens between then and now. Have a great Monday. I'll see you tomorrow.